Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 5th of January 2018. And a Happy New Year to all our listeners. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Frieda Bates.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are M3 bottleneck to be eased, chance to give feedback, and first baby of the year at hospital. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Frieda?
M3 bottleneck to be eased. Multi-million pound improvements to Winchester's worst bottleneck will move a step closer with briefings on the proposals. Highways England wants to carry out a major upgrade to the M3 Junction 9 at Winnall, where the M3 joins the A34 and A272, and has developed a scheme estimated to cost around £100 million. It aims to improve traffic flow, journey times and safety, as well as boost local economic growth and minimise environmental impact. The scheme was delayed by Highways bosses to avoid a clash with other schemes. It was originally due to start in March 2020, but was pushed back to mid-2021. The exact details of what is proposed have yet to be revealed by the Highways Agency. Now, local businesses are invited to a briefing on January the 25th to share their views with Highways England representatives on hand to answer questions. There will also be a series of public information events. The progress is welcomed by Mark Balch at Hampshire Chamber of Commerce, who said delays at the bottleneck have an economic effect. Mr. Balch, head of policy and representation, said, "The junction of the M3 and A34 is of massive strategic importance, and delays here have an economic impact across not only Winchester and the district, but across a whole wide sub-region of the UK, and even worldwide. A vehicle being delayed here can affect exports in one direction and vital just-in-time components for assembly lines in the other. The Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and its members look forward to the opportunity to discuss this with Highways England in the early part of the new year. The business briefing on January 25th takes place at the Mercure Hotel, Paternoster Row in Winchester, from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Chance to give feedback. Plans for a major revamp of Winchester city centre will go on tour next week to give residents the chance to have their say. The draft supplementary planning document, the SPD, which in October revealed how architects JTP aim to develop the Silver Hill area, will be making its first stop at Arlesford Community Centre on Wednesday, January the 10th, between 11 and 2 and 4 and 7. Plans will then be available to view at the Brooks Shopping Centre on Thursday, January the 11th, between 11 and 3, at Winchester Bus Station between 3 and 6, Winchester Railway Station between 4 and 7 on January the 12th, that's a Friday. The tour then returns to the Brooks on Saturday, January 13th, 9.30 to 5 p.m, before visiting St Morris's Covert between 9 and noon on Sunday, January the 14th, and concluding at the King's Church in Bishop's Waltham between 11 and 2, and then 4 and 7 on Monday, January the 15th. Copies of the draft SPD can also be viewed in libraries in Winchester, Aylesford, Bishop's Waltham, Waterlooville, Eastleigh, Chandler's Ford, Fareham and Romsey. The formal consultation over the SPD closes at noon on Monday, February the 5th, and that piece is accompanied by an artist's impression of what the centre of Winchester might look like after the regeneration, and thus it looks rather nice.
First baby of the year at hospital. There were some very special New Year's celebrations when Winchester parents, Deirdre and Rob, welcomed baby Rory into the world. Deirdre Blissett, 34, gave birth to 8-pound 2-ounce Rory at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital at 8:04 a.m. on New Year's Day. Deirdre, who runs her own business with husband Rob, said, "Rory wasn't due until January the 6th and arrived almost a week early. He was the first baby to be born at the hospital this year. All the nurses and midwives were really excited, which made it even more special." And accompanying that section, there's a picture of the proud parents with little Rory. He's wearing a little knitted woolly hat and sweet little blue knitted booties, and they look very, very happy. And then continuing, in Southampton, newborn twins have been born in different years, despite entering the world less than 25 minutes apart. Michelle Sandy, 32, is the proud mother of the twin daughters, who arrived either side of midnight as the world bid farewell to 2017 and celebrated the arrival of 2018. Born 3 weeks premature, Alaya and Liana both weighed 4 pounds 8 ounces when they made their entrance at the Princess Anne Hospital in Southampton. But despite being twins, Alaya and Liana will never share the same birthday. Alaya arrived at 11:40 p.m. on December the 31st, and her sister put in an appearance when the new year was just 3 minutes old. Michelle's boyfriend, maintenance worker Dan Appleton, 26, of Totten, said, "It was surreal. As it got closer to midnight, everyone was talking about whether they'd be born in 2017 or 2018, and then everything happened very quickly. As it turned out, Alaya and Liana were born in different years, despite arriving less than 25 minutes apart. Michelle was absolutely amazing. I couldn't be more proud of her. And all the staff at the hospital were terrific as well. The couple have 3 other children between them."
And that concludes the headlines. And we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Almeida, Robert Frederick Almeida, peacefully at Southampton General Hospital, aged 70. Barber, Lucy Barber, following a short stay at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 76. Healy, Alan William Healy, aged 82. Kennedy, Christine Mary Kennedy, at home in Aylesford, age 66. Mower, Rosa Mower. Robinson, Steve Robinson, suddenly aged 59. Tate, Janet Susan Tate, suddenly in Winchester, aged 63. White, Nikki White. And Turner, Brigadier Michael Henry Turner, peacefully in hospital after a long illness. And some of you may know that Michael was, until he became ill, an editor in this talking newspaper. Christian comment this week is read by Daphne. Thank you, Daphne.
And this comes from the Reverend Graham Bowkett. It's headed, "Christmas Juggler with a Lot of Balls." In recent weeks, I have been juggling a number of theological balls, or so it seems. It has just been Christmas. So, as a priest in the Church of England, I have enjoyed the great privilege of telling everyone I could about the life-giving nature of the Christian faith. The birth of Jesus, the message-bearer of hope, joy, and anticipation. I have also conducted a number of baptisms, which is brilliant. And I have also had to be with quite a number of families who have had close relatives die. Funerals at Christmas do, for whatever reason, seem more difficult and complex than perhaps at other times in the year. On such occasions, one of the things that I often think about is how each family and congregation seem to vary so wildly in their interpretation of these events. I think most people, but not all, at church at Christmas get it. And if they don't, I tell them anyway. A baptism is more complex. For some, all sorts of ideas exist. Is it a naming service, dedication service, or service about the forgiveness of sins, or a service of blessing? And then again, at a funeral, great care needs to be taken. I know what the Christian hope is, and the funeral service is drenched in language to describe that hope. But it is not uncommon to have people say when discussing the funeral service that we don't do religion, but then invariably express a hope that their loved one is at rest, in heaven, or in a better place, etc. So while religion might be off, theology definitely isn't. So again, care needs to be exercised when defining religion. Luckily, faith in Jesus is rather more simple. The thing is, Christianity and the birth of Christ are closely related to death, Christmas and Easter. The theology of Jesus Christ, built upon the salvation offered to humanity at his death, his rising offering all people a way to escape death itself. That is all easily said, but death continues to pose a serious challenge to most people, intellectually, as well as the obvious physical challenge. François VI, Duc de La Rochefoucauld, Prince de Marsillac, now that's a name, when he was thinking about all this, thought it impossible to, quote, look directly at either the sun or death, close quotes. Our attempts to think about our own deaths, our purpose and existence, and our demise are existentially unthinkable. Therefore, the fact that we all will die poses quite a challenge. Only one hope has any real chance of measuring up to that challenge. Only one hope makes any sense, and it's not, I will admit, religion. Religion itself is only the instrument that points to true knowledge, to God. Everything, even this life, has meaning if it is in relation to the unknown, known cause of everything. All it takes is a choice. No God, no Jesus, no purpose and salvation, or believe in yourself. Functional, creative and intelligent, yes, but also frail, vulnerable and finite. To have salvation, you need only one thing, faith. But it's a choice, your choice. Pray, have faith and make the right one. And that's from the Reverend Graham Bowkett, Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Alsford.
Moving on to letters to the editor, the first letter is read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, this one's headed Care Awards, and it comes from Councillor Peter Edgar, who writes from the castle in Winchester. Sir, as the Hampshire County Council Lead Member for Education, an important part of my role is to attend a number of schools' events every week. One very special occasion is the County Council Children in Care Awards. This is where we recognise and celebrate the educational achievements of the young people in our schools that are in our care. Given the challenging personal circumstances of these young people, I feel they should be congratulated on their awards at both primary and secondary level. It's an extremely happy event for the children and their carers and involves their participation in workshops, in music, drama, art, football and creative writing. And this year, we were joined by two guests. The children's author and illustrator Liz Millian, who ran a much enjoyed workshop on how to start your own story illustrations, and the celebrated children's author Geoffrey White, who gave a fantastic motivational talk about the power of words and how he came to love reading and telling stories. I'm sure the experience that our guests provided will stay with the children for a long time. The event was held at the University of Winchester, with whom the County Council works very closely. Student ambassadors from the university participated fully with the organisation, supporting the shared message of high aspiration and achievement for all. It was also encouraging to witness how well the social workers know their children. This is truly a very special event, and demonstrated yet again how dedicated our foster carers, social workers, and other children's services staff are to the children in our care. It goes to show how the great things that young people can achieve when well supported, even if their lives have had a difficult start, can come to fruition. By going the extra mile for children in care, the County Council is boosting their educational attainment and therefore their future opportunities. I was very pleased to see this in action and to see the response of the young people themselves enjoying opportunities to show their creativity and take pride in their achievements at this incredibly enjoyable event. Councillor Peter Edgar finishes by saying, a huge well done to all involved.
The next letter comes from Daphne Deer. Sir, while sitting having a pub lunch in Alton with my family, my attention was drawn by a raucous bunch of young people at a table close by who were jeering through the window at a man standing out in the miserable weather wearing a sandwich board bearing the words, Jesus is the reason for the season. I am not a religious person, but my heart went out to this dear man who stood alone, reminding people of what Christmas is really about. As an animal rights supporter, I have myself on occasion been the butt of smart remarks and derision for simply standing up for what I believe in. A last-minute race round a couple of food stores to try, without success, to buy soya milk and some extra vegan and veggie meat substitutes cheered me up no end. All I saw were empty spaces. How encouraging it was not to be able to get what I wanted. And that's from Daphne Deer of Fairdown Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
The next letter is headed Thanks, Councils, for the Barriers. This comes from Alan Parker of Berwick Close. Sir, a very big thank you to all those in public office, Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council and Hampshire Police, who authorised the installation of concrete lorry-proof barriers in Winchester's pedestrian high street. Your actions have prevented the possibility of many families suffering grief from vehicle attacks. However, arrows to show how to avoid the barriers defeats the object of the exercise. These permanent barriers could benefit from some architectural input to fit into the street scene, perhaps as extra seating. Well done to Winchester City Council for providing fantastic Christmas lights to the city. Keep up the good work. And there is a picture of the Upper High Street with the barriers in place. And I must say they are pretty ugly.
To counter fraud. Sir, the obvious way to minimise misuse of blue badges is to place them with the photograph of the recipient face up. Anyone seeing a different person using the badge could then report the matter. Chronicle Letters, December the 28th. When some time ago I suggested this to, I believe, the local parking office, I was told that this was not allowed, quotes, because of data protection. This is PC gone mad. As the user of a blue badge myself, I have absolutely no problem with my photograph being shown. I must admit that when using the badge abroad in warmer climes, where my metal knees seem to work somewhat better, to exaggerating my limp somewhat when leaving my car. The blue badge is issued for 3 years, but a temporary one of a different colour should be made available to those recovering from injury. I well remember some years ago when I had my first knee replaced and was in pain and using a crutch, being told that there was nothing short-term available. I made a fuss and managed to persuade the parking office to issue me with a letter valid for 2 weeks, which I used to display. And that comes from Keith Webb of Quarry Road in Winchester.
And now a letter from Sharon Bethel. Sir, as one of the long-standing pensioner volunteers at the Wessex Cancer Trust shop, the most profitable shop in their portfolio, where we, with the tireless assistant managers, worked extremely hard to stock the racks and shelves each time we had a shift, I was appalled by the comments of the managing director of Wessex Cancer Trust in your issue of December the 21st. Since the appearance of the new retail director, there has been nothing but bad comments about her management style. Quotes, "It's my way or the highway," end quotes, with absolutely no discussion. Whilst we all accept that change can be a good thing, this lady seems determined to rid the store and the donations supplied by the good people of Wheaton Winchester and make it much more like a typical retail shop such as Debenhams or John Lewis. As we all know, people go into charity shops to have a good rummage and hopefully find good bargains, supported by friendly and helpful volunteers. The Week store is now bereft of good stock. There is a minimal feel to the store, with customers occasionally asking, "Is the shop closing down?" Why treat your core volunteer team with such disdain and alienate a group of people who, for reasons of their own, wanted to support Wessex Cancer Trust in Week? Violence, whether it is verbal or actual, is unacceptable, and verbal aggression has mainly come from management. The volunteer who was evicted by the police from the shop was only trying to minute the discussions that senior management were having when they dismissed most of the volunteers. The original location of these meetings was Costa Coffee. Very inappropriate. When will the trustees see the error of their ways in allowing one person to eradicate all the goodwill and hard work for which this shop was renowned? Will they wait until the takings disappear and then take action? We hope not, as this charity deserves better. And that's from Sharon Bethel, ex-volunteer, Wessex Cancer Trust, Stony Lane, Week.
The next letter comes from John Barstow, member of the Usdaw Executive Council of Fittleworth in West Sussex, and it's about shop closures. Sir, Remembrance Sunday 2018 falls exactly on November the 11th, Armistice Day, and exactly 100 years to the day since the guns fell silent in the fields where the poppies grew. Hence, there is a prima facie case for Parliament to legislate and provide for retail closure on this particular Remembrance Sunday, to raise the qualities of peace and decorum that one associates with remembrance, and to enable more working to be able to partake in the Remembrance Sunday events. I hope Hampshire MPs raise this issue in Parliament in the form of questions and private members' bills, particularly given the proud links between Her Majesty's forces and Hampshire that have stood the test of time. John Barstow, Fittleworth, West Sussex.
Now, looking back, we turn to the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, John.
Yes, and this is dated Monday, January the 5th, 1818, and we begin with a cautionary and rather horrible tale, actually. On Tuesday afternoon, a son of Mr. Richard Hunt of Romsey, a child about 8 years old, with other children, purchased some gunpowder at a shop in Romsey. Someone furnishing them with a light, they retired to the back part of the premises to amuse themselves with it. The above-mentioned child, on being desired to kneel down and blow it, unfortunately complied when the whole of it exploded in his face, and he now lies a shocking spectacle to behold, being dreadfully scorched from beneath his chin to his eyebrows and forehead. although hopes are entertained that he will not entirely lose his eyesight. Something a bit more cheerful now. Nearly 200 of the poor of the parish of Byton were bountifully regaled on New Year's Day by direction of the benevolent Marchioness of Buckingham, with a good dinner of roast beef and plum pudding and plenty of strong beer, when each family also received a supply of clothing for the winter.
And now 100 years ago, and this is Saturday, January the 5th, 1918. In our seventh page will be found two lists of recipients of New Year honours and military decorations, and it will be observed that many local names are included. Taking them in order of the lists, it will be noticed that Brigadier General A.J. Kelly has been appointed to a companionship of the Bath Military Division. Brigadier General Kelly, prior to the outbreak of war, resided at Wellington House, Winchester, and served for some time on the town council, resigning that position only a few weeks ago. Temporary Brigadier General Basil Ferguson Burnett Hitchcock, PSO, of Weak Manor, Winchester, is also honoured with the Order of the Bath. And a second item, it will be interesting to know that in the 13 weeks ending December the 29th last, Winchester subscribed £113,016 towards the purchase of National War Bonds. It is a substantial sum, but it is below the quota, that is to say, the proportionate amount on a population basis, which the National War Savings Committee calculates should be subscribed weekly to give the desired figure for the entire country. Taking the population of Winchester as 23,380, the committee estimate the quota at £11,700. And if this had been reached, it would have amounted in 13 weeks to £152,100. The weekly amount subscribed has varied a great deal.
This piece is dated 50 years ago, Saturday, January the 6th, 1968. Winchester City Council on Wednesday evening agreed to make cuts to save more than £100,000 they were originally intending to spend in the next financial year. 16 schemes in the capital expenditure programme have been deferred for 12 months and two others placed on a reserve list to be finally decided when the rates estimate for the financial year 68-69 are considered. Despite the cut, there was another forecast that the rates will be rising in May. Councillor Stanley Spicer told the council, "I am not happy about this, except that it does relieve the ratepayer of some burden, although the rates are expected to go up. But I do not like the idea of putting things off. I do not like this continual cheese pairing." The schemes to be deferred are: the council plans to build shops and offices in Middlebrook Street, although the plans and details are to be worked out in the meantime. This is a reduction of £7,000 to £3,000 in the development of railway land, adaptation of refuse destructor, repairs and renewals to Abbey House, improvements to the Guildhall stage, development of the St Mary's School site, improvements in Oliver's Battery Road, reduction of £2,500 on new roads in the Brooks area, new paving in St Peter Street, footway in Sarum Road, parking area at Durngate, modernisation of some street lighting, improving the entrance of the council depot, garages in Cromwell Road and Garage Road, new water mains, and replacing the new council's water lorry with three vans. Now, there is another item here as well. Hampshire County Council are to adopt a system of comprehensive education. This decision was taken at a special county council meeting on Monday, following an informal meeting in private session between members and Mr. R.M. Marsh, the county education officer. There is no fixed date for the change to take place, and no firm decision on precisely what system of comprehensive education is going to be adopted. But Alderman A.H. Quilley said, the adoption of a comprehensive system does mean the extinction of grammar schools.
And here we come to Friday, January the 8th, 1993, 25 years ago. 6,000 district council tenants in Winchester and from Micheldever to the Meon Valley will be hit by a rent rise of more than four times the inflation rate, an increase described as, quote, staggering. They will now have to find an extra £4.75 a week. Average council rates will increase in April from £34.39 to £39.14. Winchester City Council has defended themselves by blaming the government for three quarters of the 13.8% increase, arguing that the rise would only have been around 3% without large subsidy cuts imposed by Whitehall. After approving the increase at a special housing committee meeting on Tuesday, with only Labour's Nigel Fox voting against, committee chairman and Labour group leader John Cloyne said, "I regret this rise very much," with a loud chorus of "hear, hear" at this point. "There is no question that we have lost £1 million of government support, which is a 10.8% rent rise we simply can't do anything about." Slightly happier news here. A Winchester woman's work for charity has earned her a place in the Queen's New Year's Honours list. Judith Rich of Northbrook Avenue, Winchester, has been awarded the OBE for her work as director of the charity group Cards for Good Causes. The organisation runs 225 card shops across the county that raise money for 25 charities, including the British Heart Foundation, the Leukaemia Research Fund, and the Multiple Sclerosis Society. Over £2.6 million was raised in the 6 weeks before Christmas. Mrs. Rich, who's been fundraising for 22 years, is Honorary Secretary of the Institute of Charity Fundraising. "I'm absolutely thrilled," she said. "You normally expect this to happen to someone else. It's absolutely lovely."
The Hampshire Chronicle editorial this week is read by Frieda and will be followed by First Person, read by John. Thank you, Frieda.
This editorial comment is headed, "This is no time for gobbledygook." Just as the Hampshire Chronicle was going to press yesterday, we learned that Hampshire Cultural Trust plans to cut a significant number of jobs. The trust was set up in 2014 to run the cultural assets of Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council, mainly the collections and various museums, including in Winchester the City Museum in the Square, the Westgate on the High Street, and the gallery at the Discovery Centre. There were concerns at the time about a democratic deficit, as removing the trust from the direct control of local authorities meant there would be less public scrutiny. One benefit of such scrutiny is that the managers have to constantly be thinking of how their actions impact on the public. The comments of the chief executive, Dr. Janet Owen, do not inspire one with confidence. How about this for a classic piece of management gobbledygook? The 10% reduction in headcount is being delivered through a fitness for purpose organisational review, which focuses more resources from central teams into delivering local benefit. HCT is on a long-term journey of development that needs to combine effective delivery and future financial resilience. These cuts risk a cultural disaster for Hampshire. Perhaps Dr. Owen could better explain what she is on about.
First Person this week comes from Joanna Lewis, and her piece is headed, "Time to Fess Up Over Debt." What happened to Christmas 2017? Were you one of the many families I know hit by flu or other illness? One friend was rushed to accident and emergency on Boxing Day. Another was away in France only to find herself with a drip on one arm and a phrase book in the other hand. Apparently burst appendix wasn't in her GCSE syllabus. Meanwhile, I have pretty much no recollection of Christmas Day. No, I wasn't last seen under the tree singing that modern classic one Prosecco, two Prosecco, three Prosecco, four. It was that mean old cold virus going round that lasted for days. However, one thing stopping me thinking I'd missed Christmas altogether is my long accumulated credit card bill. A five-figure sum is big, but it's not clever. According to the Money Advice Trust, nearly 40% of people put Christmas on their plastic, which makes for a very stressful January. Money's in the air, but not in the pocket. Hollywood is tempting us with the movie All the Money in the World, the story of a kidnapping attempt to extort money from a billionaire family. Another movie, Downsizing, with Matt Damon, addresses the yearning to reduce our consumption and gobbling up of the world's resources. But escapism is not going to help us. Pretending your debt isn't there will only benefit your bank. The first step to take is to talk to someone you know and who cares about you. Fess up and have a full and frank discussion about spending and attitude to money. I had turned avoiding answering calls from my bank into an Olympic sport until, like a wanted person on the Interpol list, I was intercepted in Alsford. So I decided to speak to my sister for advice. She's been brilliant with money ever since she was five. At first it didn't go well. She began using strange words I'd never heard of, like monthly budgeting and living within your means. She might as well have been talking Vietnamese, but I got the hang of it. Working out exactly how much you have to spend each month and then calculating what you have left was humbling but revelatory. While I still believe I can justify having 47 lipsticks, I won't be buying any more for a while. But it's not just the fault of the feckless and irresponsible like me. There's some very unhelpful high street banking practices designed to make money out of you. Continually offering you more credit cards, high credit card borrowing limits, and upping your overdraft limit way above your salary are vampire strategies designed to bleed you dry. Sneakily, internet banks can describe your on-screen credit card debt as your balance. Your overdraft is described as available spending. Credit card borrowing charges or daily overdraft fees are never separately highlighted. My bank doesn't send a weekly text anymore showing you your balance. It does when you're approaching your overdraft limit, but that's just too late. Tempting people to address their debt in ways that invariably lead to more debt should be stamped out. All adverts for payday lending should be banned. Their interest rates are just morally wrong. And let's throw in adverts for bingo and online casinos too while we're at it. And beware! Another film just out, Molly's Game, glamorises high-stakes poker. But the only way forward if you're in debt is to stop spending. Luckily, there's great help out there. The Money Advice Service, for example, suggests opening a safe bank account, one with no overdraft facility, to break the pattern of debt normalisation. And we have local banks like the Wessex Community Bank. Friendly staff offer non-judgmental advice, interest rates are lower, and profits are reinvested into the community. Money worries can eat away at your spirit and stop you living to your full potential. Austerity's not going to be fun, but there are worse things than learning how to avoid debt. And like the start of the new year, new beginnings hold the promise of better times ahead. Ka-ching.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, the first of which is read by Frieda. Thank you, Frieda.
My item is headed, Do You know these people? There's a big question being asked about this year's Mayor's Quiz. No, it's not what is the largest country in Africa or who is the Australian Prime Minister. It's who won the event last year? And can we have our trophy back, please? The charity event is set to raise a substantial sum for the Mayor of Winchester, David McLean's charities, the MS Society, Canine Partners, and the Bishop's Waltham North Pond Conservation Project. But organisers are getting a bit concerned that the winning team have not been in touch to return the cup. Organiser Janet Reed asked the Chronicle if we had the trophy, but the newspaper won the trophy back in 2015. She sent Belgarum a photo of the winners, pictured with the then-Mayor Jane Rutter. Tickets are now on sale at Winchester Tourist Information Centre for the event at Winchester Guildhall on Saturday, February the 3rd at 7pm, with Kevin Ashman from the BBC Eggheads programme as quizmaster. Teams should be no more than 8 persons. Tickets are £12 each, which includes nibbles and a hot snack in the interval. And the last date to purchase tickets is January the 27th. Mrs. Reed says the cup holders can contact her by email on, all lowercase, reed.janet.h@gmail.com or drop the cup off at Abbey House.
Festive mission. A blind ex-serviceman from Winchester was thrilled to spend Christmas with fellow veterans thanks to a national charity. Leslie Stainer, 85, a former RAF engineer, spent the festive period with other vision-impaired veterans at Blind Veteran UK's Brighton Centre. Every year, the charity which provides help and support to blind and vision-impaired veterans invites those who would otherwise have been alone at Christmas to spend the week at one of the charity's training and rehabilitation centres. Mr. Stainer said, "The friendships that I've made since joining Blind Veterans UK are unbelievable. They take me right back to my time in the RAF. It's being with people that matters to me, and that's what I'm looking forward to when I spend my Christmas at the centre. Companionship, great food, helpful staff and comfortable accommodation. What more could I want? I love the Brighton Centre, and I love meeting new friends there. I can't wait to have Christmas lunch, go on trips, and enjoy the special activities there planned." And there's a lovely photograph there of Mr. Stainer looking very happy.
Be ready for Trash Friday. Councils are bracing themselves for fly tipping today, believed by experts to be the biggest day for illegal dumping. Experts from Junk Hunters have warned that the first Friday of the new year could see huge amounts of tipping as householders struggle to get rid of Christmas waste. Fly tippers often do their dumping at night and are likely to wait until the end of the working week. Junk Hunters urge householders not to succumb to the temptation to fly tip and called upon councils to offer additional services. According to the latest government figures from 2016 to 17, there were over 1 million tipping incidents throughout England with a clearance cost of £57.5 million. Chief Executive of Junk Hunters, Harsha Rathnayaka, said, "Coupled with the late or reduced council collection services, it can get very stressful and people may be tempted to take their rubbish and just dump it somewhere quiet. But they really, really mustn't."
This week's announcements begin with a selection of forthcoming events in and around Winchester. On Saturday the 13th of January at Winchester Guildhall, award-winning biographer Claire Tomalin is in conversation with John Miller at 6pm. This event is in aid of Home Start Winchester and costs £12. For further details or booking, telephone 01962 851177. That's 01962 851177. On Sunday the 14th of January at New Hall, Winchester College, there's a concert of works by Fauré, Vidor, Bartok and Beethoven featuring Adrian Brendel on the cello and Tim Horton on the piano. Tickets are £20 from 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. On three successive Wednesdays, that's Wednesday the 17th, 21st and 31st of January, at the United Church, Jewellery Street, there's a series of lunchtime talks by the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, on the theme Space in the City. The talks are from 12:30 to 1 p.m. Entry is free, but donations are welcome. On Friday the 19th of January, the Friends of Winchester Cathedral are holding a coffee morning at 10:30 a.m. in the Undercroft. This is a chance for you to come along, have a cup of coffee and a slice of cake, and learn more about the work of the Friends in supporting projects to help the cathedral renovation. At the Chesil Theatre, Winchester, from Saturday the 20th of January to Saturday the 27th of January, the play is The Duet for One. Its performance is at 7:45 p.m. There's no performance on Sunday the 21st of January, but there is a matinee at 2:30 p.m. on the 27th of January. Tickets are £13 from 0333 666 3366. That's 0333 666 3366. And finally, on Saturday the 27th of January, the Winchester City Festival Choir Concert at 7:30 p.m. at Thorndon Hall Performing Arts Centre, Chandler's Ford, features Rutter's Mass of the Children, Bernstein's Chichester Psalms, and a specially commissioned setting by David Briggs of Gerard Manley Hopkins' poem, God's Grandeur. Tickets are £15 from 023 8024 6555. That's 023 8024 6555. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 5th of January at 8:08 a.m. and begins at 4:12 p.m. On Wednesday the 10th of January, it ends at 8:06 a.m. and begins at 4:20 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. I'll repeat, 01962 870 370. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Frieda. Thank you, Frieda.
I'm looking at a delightful picture of a group of ladies wearing wonderful long red frocks with sort of furry collars and Santa hats. And it's entitled Ladies' Barbershop Sings for Hospital. The Tudor Roses, Winchester's own ladies' barbershop chorus, sang and had fun at the Southampton General Hospital, raising money for the hospital charity. The chorus currently has about 35 members of all ages from 18 upwards who come from across southern Hampshire. The chorus has competed locally, nationally and internationally.
Debbie takes the register at the zoo. Marwell Zoo have started an exhausting annual animal count which will see thousands of creatures, from tiny insects to Amur tigers, tallied up. The annual event is part of the zoo's licensing conditions and will see keepers count more than 2,000 animals across more than 140 species. Led by Animal Registrar Debbie Pearson, the end-of-year animal audit takes keepers about a week to complete. The information collected, which includes births and deaths, as well as arrivals and departures to the Hampshire Park in the last 12 months, is logged and shared with other zoos around the world through a database. Last year, more than 2,000 animals across 143 species were counted, And this year, the count will include the breeding successes of critically endangered animals, including the African wild asphodel Rubel, born at the zoo in July, and Addax calf Tamarisk, born in September. Every resident mammal, bird, reptile, amphibian, fish and invertebrate must be counted as part of the stocktake. Even tiny creatures such as leafcutter ants are recorded in colonies, but all others are recorded individually. The trickiest to count include the Partula snails, tiny tree snails driven to extinction in the wild, which are part of an international breeding programme and which must be counted every week. Keepers will also have to count four species of lemur, the critically endangered Altur and gentle black and white ruffed ring-tailed, and the endangered crowned lemurs. And there's a delightful selection of photographs there of Debbie Pearson doing her rounds, Debbie Pearson looking like a young lady who really enjoys her work. The best photograph is her filling in a form while a lemur is looking over her shoulder, making sure she's got it right.
And now for some harsh reality. Rail fares up the sharpest for years. Rail passengers travelling on the first working day of 2018 were hit with the largest fare rise in 5 years. Protests were held outside around 40 stations to mark the biggest increase since 2013, as average ticket prices across Britain went up by 3.4% on Tuesday. Members of the Rail Maritime and Transport, that's RMT union, handed out chocolates to sweeten the bitter pill of the price increase. Paul Plummer, chief executive of the Rail Delivery Group, which represents train operators, said, "Nobody wants to see fares going up," but he insisted the increase is necessary to improve the network. He told the Press Association, "All we can do is to make sure we invest to improve as fast as we possibly can. We've had decades of underinvestment, which we are now addressing, and have been consistently over the last few years, but it takes time. We need that money from fares to be able to afford that investment." Many season tickets have gone up by more than £100. In Winchester, a standard season ticket is now £5,128, up from £4,860 in January 2016. Labour members joined the party's national campaign against the 32% rise in fares since 2010. Members handed out leaflets highlighting the party's pledge to return the railways to public ownership. Jill Connell, vice chairman of the local party, said, "With stagnant wages, this is yet another squeeze on living standards, with people facing an inflation-busting rise in the cost of getting to work and for leisure activities. This not only affects people travelling to London, but those commuting into Winchester from surrounding areas, supporting our local economy. Labour would bring the railways back into public ownership for a fairer deal and better service for travellers and the taxpayer." Stephen Joseph, chief executive of the Campaign for Better Transport, CBT, accused the government of choosing to snub rail passengers by continuing to increase fares while fuel duty is frozen for a seventh consecutive year. "The government uses the previous July's Retail Prices Index, RPI, measure of inflation, to determine increases in regulated fares, 3.6% in 2017. These are around half of all tickets and include season tickets on most commuter routes. Train operating companies set the prices of other tickets but are bound by competition rules." Bruce Williamson of campaign group Rail Future warned that people are being priced out of getting to work. He called for the Consumer Price Index, CPI, inflation measure to be used for regulated fare increases. "It is normally lower than RPI and is used by the government to set increases in benefits and pensions." Mr. Williamson said if CPI had been used instead of RPI since 2004, then rail fares would be 17% lower, a significant amount of money for season ticket holders who are spending thousands of pounds to get to work. It's no wonder that poor value for money is the number one concern of rail travellers, with British rail fares amongst the most expensive in Europe. A Department for Transport spokesman said, "We are investing in the biggest modernisation of our railways since Victorian times, providing faster and better, more comfortable trains with extra seats."
Here's one to warm the cockles of your heart. Cafe opens its doors to the vulnerable over Christmas. A cafe near Winchester threw open its doors on Christmas Day to offer a free lunch to homeless and elderly people in the area. Thrive Cafe and Wellbeing, based in Oliver's Battery, served food to members from Trinity Winchester and Age UK. They also had the help of Winchester's new companion driving service, Driving Miss Daisy, which collected elderly residents from around Oliver's Battery and returned them to their homes after the lunch. The lunch was all made possible by the help of volunteers and donations from the public, as well as a donation made by Hemsworth Stationery and a 7.5 kilogram turkey donated by Barlow's the Butchers.
Here's news of another big event that took place over the festive period. This piece is entitled "Hundreds Attend Annual Antiques Event." Winchester residents were out and about on the first day of 2018 looking for hidden gems at the Winchester Antiques and Decorative Art Fair. Regular dealers and enthusiasts, along with additional traders, came together to bring more than 150 stands to visitors at the River Park Leisure Centre. On offer was mid-20th century collectibles, kitchenalia, retro and vintage items, and vinyl records. The fair's been running for more than 30 years, and it's established on the antique circuit as one of the best for New Year's Day. Previously run by Magnum Fairs until the proprietor retired, this year it was organised by Jackie Edwards of ACVR Events. For the rest of 2018 and beyond, Grandma's Attic Fairs will be taking the reins, as well as organising additional fairs in the Winchester area. There's a nice spread of photographs there, showing stallholders with all their wares, including one stall being run by a lady who looks just like Mavis from Coronation Street.
Aldi donates food on Christmas Eve. Three charities received an early Christmas present from a Winchester supermarket after it donated surplus food on Christmas Eve. Aldi invited applications from local charities and food banks to make the most of unsold fare after stores closed on December the 24th. Around 200 tonnes of food were donated across the UK, with each participating store giving away more than 1,600 meals on average. Winchester Vineyard Church, Emmaus, Hampshire, and Wells Vineyard Church Storehouse each received a share of the spare food from the branch on Stockbridge Road Week. Oliver King, Managing Director of Corporate Responsibility at Aldi, said, "Closing our stores on Christmas Day and Boxing Day is not only great news for our employees, who get to enjoy an extended rest over the festive break, but it also means we can give something back to the communities around our stores. We've been overwhelmed by the interest from charities and food banks in the South East, which shows just how important this kind of initiative is. We hope the food we have donated has made a real difference this Christmas."
Students to help with design of ice rink. A group of award-winning university students will help to design Winchester's proposed ice rink. Students Meg Allipat, Florence Japson and Maria Joseph had previously been part of a team which won international acclaim for taking the top prize in the Building the Future Shaping Our Worlds competition for designing an environmentally friendly ice rink for Southampton while studying A-levels at St Anne's School and Peter Simmons College. The proposed £20 million private scheme for Winchester would see an Olympic-sized ice arena and curling rink built at the old depot site at Bar End. Proposals suggest the facility would also include a 10-pin bowling alley and indoor caving. However, Winchester City Council have thus far given the scheme the cold shoulder, stating that although they were open to proposals such as the ice rink, the Bar End site was not currently for sale. Ice skating advocate Edna Bowden, who has championed the Winchester scheme, said that Athos, the developers, who plan to hold meetings with Winchester City Council and Winchester MP Steve Brine in the next month to try and move the project forward. She said, "It will be a very good development for the city that will bring jobs and give people a new place to go. And since it's private, it won't cost the council a penny. We would like to work with the council to bring the project to fruition as soon as possible." Now, this article has many photographs. The three young ladies who are perhaps going to be involved, the students, are there with Edna Bowden, the advocate of this new scheme. There's a smaller picture showing cathedral choristers using the cathedral Christmas ice rink. And then a picture with a huge sort of shed, bluish shed with people going in and out, which I assume is the proposed building which would house this new ice rink.
Now, here's a piece which links directly to the editorial comment which Frieda brought us earlier. It's headed "Cultural Trust to Axe Jobs as Grants Cut." The trust set up to protect Hampshire heritage and culture has announced it will be cutting jobs following a reduction in grants. The Hampshire Cultural Trust, the HCT, reported that it will need to cut 10% of its workforce in order to meet the revised forecast. The trust, which was set up as an independent charity in 2014 to take over the running of Hampshire County Council and Winchester City Council assets, currently holds 2.5 million items and is supported by more than 400 volunteers. The exact figure of how many jobs would be lost is not yet clear. Now, here's a statement from Dr. Janet Owen, the chief executive, and this is the piece that the Hampshire Chronicle earlier on referred to as gobbledygook. Janet Owen says, "In order to meet the planned reductions in local authority grants that were agreed when HCT was established, there will be an approximately 10% overall reduction in headcount. This is being delivered through a fitness for purpose organisational review, which focuses more resources from central teams into delivering local benefit." Good. The trust said as part of the review, it would be increasing the number of posts in its museums, but it's unclear whether these will be paid positions. Dr. Owen added, "For the first time, Milestones Museum and Basing House in Basingstoke will have a dedicated leadership, operations and cultural experience team. A similar team will be introduced in Winchester to support delivery of an exciting culture and heritage programme. HCT is on a long-term journey of development that needs to combine effective delivery and future financial resilience. Among the museums it manages are the Gallery at Winchester Discovery Centre, the Westgate Museum and the Winchester City Museum in the Square."
St John's design proposals. Designs for 30 homes for the elderly in Winchester have been unveiled. The proposals, submitted by St John's Winchester, will see the new almshouses providing care for the elderly in Chesil Street and Colebrook Street. As previously reported, 14 homes would be built for rent in Colebrook Street, with a further 16 in Chesil Street, following the demolition of the current cottages. They would feature level access, wet rooms and other features designed to support independent living. There would also be green roofs, roof terraces, open access galleries and secure landscaping designed to support community life. Artists' impressions of the project have been revealed by the charity. The Colebrook Street site would be located directly adjacent to St John's existing Southside Almshouses. The second site in Chesil Street will be based next to the Chesil Theatre and backs onto the River Itchen. The charity is also refurbishing 20 existing almshouses in the city, 9 of which have been completed. And that's accompanied by an artist's impression of the new almshouses in Chesil Street, looking at them from the weirs, and a couple of photographs, the Colebrook Street one showing the site, and also Chesil Street showing the cottages which are due for demolition.
BMX campaign. A petition to save woodland in Winchester, used for BMX and mountain bike trails, from being bulldozed, has garnered more than 9,000 signatures. Users of the trails say Winchester City Council are planning to bulldoze the area of mature woodland next to the St Catherine's Park and Ride at Bar End to make way for a 14-bay coach park. The petition attracted more than 1,000 signatures in the first 24 hours. It says that the council move is to help pull more tourists into the city. And it states, "We believe access to local woodland for both cycling and witnessing nature firsthand is more important than inflating Winchester's visitor numbers."
Scouts Antarctic final preparations. Two Hampshire Scouts who are set to battle freezing temperatures and months alone when they attempt to ski to the South Pole will complete their final training expedition in just a few weeks. Ollie Robinson from Winchester and Joe Doherty, a former Sparsholt College student from Andover, will head to Haugesdal in Norway on February the 4th to perfect their hauling skills ahead of the major expedition in November. Joe and Ollie will face temperatures as low as minus 20 degrees centigrade during the training trip, which will also include a 5-day traverse of the Hardangervidda Plateau on cross-country skis. Following that, the duo, who are part of the wider Hampshire Scout Expedition's Antarctica team, will then head to Chile in November for final preparations before jetting to Antarctica. There, they will face temperatures as low as minus 50 degrees centigrade and will be hauling more than 100 kilograms of food and equipment across one of the toughest environments on Earth. The pair will have to consume more than 6,000 calories a day just to survive, and any mishap could endanger their lives. Ollie said, "With the help of sponsorship from the Otterix, Boxit, Helios and the Youth Corporation, we're now able to make our final training trip a reality. Norway is going to be essential in preparing us for polar conditions, and we owe a huge debt to the four sponsors for helping us at this important time for the expedition." The team is also spreading the news of the expedition through a challenge badge. Children and scouts can earn the badge by completing a series of activities, including building igloos, dragging sleds, and sending the team their best tweet. Joe said, "We've been absolutely blown away by their enthusiasm." And there's a lovely picture there of Ollie and Joseph looking very fit and happy and cheerful, being warmly congratulated and no doubt given every good wish by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor David McLean.
Furniture shop closes. A furniture store is the latest to close its doors in Winchester. Multi York on Jury Street held a closing down sale after the company entered administration in November. It shut just before Christmas. The furniture maker, which was founded in 1978, follows a number of other well-known and independent brands who have closed down or left the city, including L.K. Bennett, Zoe Jewelers, Next and Jaeger. In July, fashion retailer Cadogan & Co., which has been in business for more than 20 years in the square, also went into administration. But at the same time, Turtle Bay is due to move in at the former Tony & Guy site, and TK Maxx is also set to open a new shop in the Brooks Shopping Centre. Tesco is set to move into the unit where River Island used to sit on the High Street, and the restaurant The Ivy is also set to open in the unit L.K. Bennett occupied, creating 100 new jobs. A new shop in Winchester city centre has moved a step closer after plans to change the sign were approved. Kitchen retailer The Shaker Kitchen Company looks set to open in the square following the approval of the change by planning officers at the City Council. The company currently has showrooms in Cirencester, Fulham and Clapham. It is set to move into the vacant unit at 30 to 31 The Square, which was previously occupied by high-end fashion store Cadogan & Co.
Donation boost. Hampshire residents are being urged to support organ donation after figures showed the number of people spending the holiday on the National Heart Transplant waiting list rose by 24%. In the county, there are 8 people on the heart list, while 158 people from Hampshire are recorded as ever having received a heart-only transplant. NHS Blood and Transplant is urging people to tell their families that they wish to donate to help with the deadly shortage of organs. Since last Christmas Day, 31 people across the country have died while on the heart waiting list. Sally Johnson, NHS Blood and Transplant Director, said, "Hundreds of people are spending Christmas waiting for a call that might never come. Their families will be spending the festive season living with fear and uncertainty. We desperately need more people in Hampshire to agree to donation to help with the number of people waiting for hearts and organs of every kind. Tell your family you want to donate and join the NHS Organ Donor Register."
Now here's a bit of bad news for people who are trying to get around in Winchester for the next few months. Roadworks to resume. Major roadworks are set to resume next week, with closures in Winchester city centre. The £1.4 million Scottish and Southern Electricity Networks SSEN project is scheduled to begin again on Monday, January the 8th, following an embargo on repairs over the festive period. Road closures will be put into place on St Clement Street and Staple Gardens during the roadworks, which is seeing underground cables replaced over a 10-month period. The next phase will see work carried out in St Clement Street and Staple Gardens before moving on to Southgate Street. They'll then move to High Street, Trafalgar Street and finally Jury Street. Although road closures will be in place, the roads will remain open to residents and businesses at all times. A spokesman for SSEN said, "We will do everything possible to ensure we complete our works on schedule. However, we hope you will appreciate that site conditions may cause some adjustments. And if that's the case, we'll aim to let you know as soon as possible." Work began in October to install more than 1.9 kilometres of cables. The project was then put on hold in mid-November to avoid disruption to the Christmas trade. Kevin Cracknell, SSEN's network upgrades manager, said, "The city centre is continually growing, and more customers means more demand, and that's why we need to upgrade the infrastructure."
Now here's a short piece headed Donations Plea. Naomi House and Jack's Place is appealing for donations to stock its shops for the new year. If you're having a clear out of all your new gifts from Christmas, you can give anything unwanted to the charity. Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospices at Sutton Scotney provide expert hospice care to more than 300 life-limited children, young people and their extended families. Their shops are open Monday to Saturday from 9 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. and their warehouse is open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday.
Traders report a positive Christmas. Trading in Winchester over the festive period has been positive, according to the city's Business Improvement District. Locals and tourists descending on the city were drawn in by the annual market and ice rink. Chris Turner, Business Development Executive at the BID, said, "It's been fairly buzzing and the markets have been packed. The shops I have visited passing by in the last few days have been very positive. It feels as good as the past few years, and I think we all thought it would be worse because of Brexit and the economy. It all seems to be doing well. The restaurants are very busy. I think people come for the experience, a bit of shopping and a meal. He added that trading figures from 85 businesses would be collected by the BID this month. Claire Connor, who works in Interiors Store Orchid in Parchment Street, said, "It's been great, actually. We've had loads of people over Christmas coming down this road who say they haven't been down here for ages. This is only our second year, but I do think that people are coming into Winchester specifically because of the independent shops." Lorraine Carter at Dingham's Cookshop at the Square said, "We've had a great year. It's been roughly the same as previous years in the lead up to Christmas. When the market opens, we certainly see an uplift because of passing trade."
Storm fells trees. Winchester has been battered by strong winds this week after Storm Eleanor brought down trees on busy roads in the area. Fallen trees blocked Worthy Road in Abbots Barton and Berwick Road in both directions, and drivers faced long delays back to Stoke Road after a tree came down there at about 8:10 a.m. That followed an earlier blockage when motorists were held up on the A272 between Winchester and Petersfield after a tree came down on the road at New Cheriton during the morning rush hour.
Top surgical training hailed at City Hospital. Staff at Winchester Hospital have been named among the best in the country for surgery training. The Gynaecology and Obstetrics Department at Royal Hampshire County Hospital were named in the top 10 teams in the country for surgery training. The team, which is made up of 9 consultants, were presented with a certificate from the Royal College of Obstetrics and Gynaecology, who collected results from a nationwide survey asking junior doctors about the training they received while on placement. The junior doctors surveyed were asked to rate the department on their basic ultrasound, general and procedural training, as well as giving an overall recommendation. They rated the team at Winchester Hospital very highly, giving excellent feedback and highly recommending them. René Behrens, obstetrics and gynaecology consultant at Hampshire Hospitals, NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the hospital, said, "All our consultants are enthusiastic about training future consultants, and this award only confirms our dedication and interest. We work with the trainees in teams, giving them individualised support and allowing the consultants to get to know them better in order to tailor training to their needs."
Curious headline for this one: festive knife attack on police officers. More than a dozen police officers in Hampshire were assaulted over Christmas, including one group who were attacked by a knife-wielding man. Police say 16 officers across the county were either punched, kicked, or spat at between Christmas Eve and Boxing Day. Chairman of Hampshire Police Federation, John Apter, described the attacks as unacceptable. He said that the knife attack could have been fatal had it not been for the use of a taser. Mr. Apter said, "It is only through luck and the availability of the taser that we have not had an officer killed over Christmas. The level of violence our officers have to deal with is unacceptable. Policing is unpredictable and dangerous, but we must not accept that being assaulted is just part of the job. If we do, this makes assaulting a police officer acceptable. It is not." Mr. Apter said that between 7 and 16 officers are attacked across Hampshire each weekend. He said proportionally there were more attacks over Christmas than most weekends because there were fewer officers on duty. "Officers are giving up their own Christmases to help protect and support others, and it sticks in the throat that violence is used against them." He added, "Thankfully, on this occasion, those 16 officers who were assaulted were not seriously injured. Hampshire Constabulary are unable to give details of each of the individual assaults. However, a spokesman said, "We know our job comes with an element of risk, but being assaulted is not just part of the job and must never be seen as such. Hampshire Constabulary has a zero-tolerance approach to officer assaults, and we were the first force in the country to have developed a plan known as the 7-point plan for ensuring that these incidents are investigated properly and staff and officers are supported in this process."
Now here's a timely local health warning. This article is headed, "Hampshire Parents Urged to Join Fight Against Obesity." Parents in Hampshire are being urged to reduce sugary drinks and snacks for children by national health bosses. New figures show that almost 1 in 4 youngsters are overweight or obese when they join reception aged just 4. 6 years later, that figure increases to almost 1 in 3. Public Health England say that on the statistics a result of children eating, on average, around 7 sugar cubes worth each day from drinks and snacks. They say that children are consuming at least 3 unhealthy snacks and drinks every day, with 1 in 3 having 4 or more, which is 3 times more sugar than recommended. Now PHE have stepped in, giving parents in Hampshire special offers on healthier snacks and money-off vouchers in a bid to encourage more fruit and vegetables in diets. Angela Baker, Deputy Director for Health and Wellbeing at PHE, said, "Changing our children's snacking habits can be a real challenge, and we want to make it easier for families to find healthier options. By asking parents to look for 100-calorie snacks, 2 a day maximum, we're helping them to give healthier snacks while giving them less frequently." The figures across the county say that 23.2% of children are overweight by reception, and as they head into Year 6, that figure rises to 29.3%. Dr. Alison Tedstone, Chief Nutritionist at PHE, said, "The true extent of children's snacking habits is greater than the odd biscuit or chocolate bar. Children are having unhealthy snacks throughout the day, and parents have told us that they're concerned." PHE's Change for Life campaign also comes with a food scanner app for phones, which shows how many calories and sugar an item contains. Each year, children are consuming almost 400 biscuits, more than 120 cakes and pastries, and around 100 portions of sweets, all washed down with more than 150 juice drink pouches.
Fake banknotes. A crime-fighting charity is appealing to the public for information on those who are making, selling or buying counterfeit banknotes. Crime Stoppers is trying to combat counterfeit currency by making the general public aware of the problem of counterfeit notes and what can be done about it. In the first half of 2017, over 237,000 worthless counterfeit notes with a notional value of over 4.88 million were removed from the UK's streets. While less than 1% of notes in circulation are counterfeit, this is not a victimless crime. Many retailers, businesses, schools, charities and elderly people have been conned out of money using fake notes. Christmas is a time when more cash changes hands, especially 20 and 50 pound notes, and fraudsters take advantage of the festive season by targeting busy shops with temporary staff. Incidents include scammers tricking innocent members of the public into swapping fake 20 pound notes for 2 genuine 10 pound notes, and businesses being left out of pocket if they take a counterfeit note. Counterfeit notes are also known to be linked to serious and organised criminal gangs. One gang was sentenced to over 3 years imprisonment for the manufacture of £320,000 worth of fake notes. In another more recent case, 3 men were prosecuted after £40,000 of fake notes were found in a Kent property that was also being used to supply cannabis. As well as raising public awareness of fake banknotes, in October, Crime Stoppers partnered with the Bank of England to launch the Banknote Checking Scheme. Aimed at cash handling businesses, It promotes banknote checking at point of sale through targeted training, with the aim of reducing the number of counterfeit notes being accepted. Director of Operations for Crime Stoppers, Roger Critchell, said, "Fake notes are completely worthless, and knowingly holding or passing on counterfeit notes is a crime. The purpose of this campaign is to raise awareness of counterfeit money, especially around Christmas when money can be tight, but also to highlight how heartless and callous fraudsters can be when targeting their victims."
Parking income rises at hospitals. Health chiefs who run the Winchester's hospitals raked in more than £1.25 million through parking last year. The Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, HHFT, saw its parking revenue at its hospitals soar by £224,409 in 2016-17, an increase of nearly 22%. However, bosses at HHFT, which is responsible for the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, as well as the Andover War Memorial Hospital and the North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke, say the money was either used in maintaining the car parks or is invested in the Trust's care services. The figures were disclosed as part of an investigation by the Press Association, which also revealed that NHS hospitals made a record of £174 million in the last year from charging patients, visitors and staff for car parking. Criticising the figure, Shadow Health Secretary Jonathan Ashworth added, "Hospital parking charges are an entirely unfair and unnecessary burden, which disproportionately affect the most vulnerable people using our health service." Nationally, the Liberal Democrats have branded the charges as a tax on sickness. But Lib Dem City Councillor Martin Todd said, "Whatever the picture might be nationally, if there's any spare money locally, the priority should be on care, such as cutting A&E waiting times, investment in social care, and funding more GP appointments. Because of Conservative decisions on health and care funding, local NHS staff and budgets remain under tremendous pressure. Free parking would be great if there was a way of making sure the car park didn't fill up with commuters and it was genuinely patients, relations and staff that got to use it. But given the huge savings that our local hospitals are being challenged to deliver, spending on care has to come first." HHFT Chief Executive Alex Whitfield added, "We regularly review our parking charges and recently introduced a new tariff, which includes a free period of up to 30 minutes for drivers dropping patients off for appointments. Free parking is also available for certain patients, visitors and carers at all three of our hospitals. These include patients attending for chemotherapy, visitors to patients in intensive care, or our neonatal units, and carers staying overnight with children."
Now here's a lovely piece. Award nomination for saving his friend. He is the hero porter at Winchester's hospital who used CPR to save his colleague's life. And now Daniel Spacagna has been shortlisted for a national award. Daniel's job is to move patients and vital equipment around Royal Hampshire County Hospital, but he took control of the situation when fellow porter John Baldry, 60, suffered a cardiac arrest in the staff room. Instructing another of his colleagues to put in an emergency call before performing CPR on his friend. His quick thinking kept John alive during the time it took for the emergency medical team to arrive on the scene. And after a defibrillator was used to restart his heart, John made a full recovery and is now back at work. Alan Kemp, portering and security lead at Winchester Hospital, nominated Daniel for the Lifesaver Award in the National Unsung Hero Awards 2018. The awards recognise the efforts of non-clinical healthcare staff and volunteers. Daniel has been shortlisted and will find out whether he's won during a ceremony in Manchester at the end of February. The 35-year-old from Eastleigh said, "It feels fantastic to have been shortlisted for this award, and I'd like to say a big thank you to Alan Kemp for nominating me. It would be amazing to win, but it's an honour just to have been shortlisted, and I'm looking forward to the ceremony. When I think about what I was able to do for John, it really makes me proud. We come to work to make a difference and care for patients, and I really did make a difference that day. I've done quite a few first aid courses, but fortunately, I've been on one through work about 4 weeks before the incident, so it was really fresh in my mind. It just goes to show how important doing first aid courses can be. You never know when you're going to need to use the skills you learn on them." Speaking about the incident, he said, "The adrenaline just kicked in. John's a friend as well as a colleague, and I was determined to keep going because I didn't want it to end the other way. I just did what I needed to do, and the doctor said I kept up a good rhythm." And there's a lovely picture there of Daniel and John with their arms round each other and looking very smiley and proud outside the RHCH hospital.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thank you to our readers, Frieda Bates.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put the label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. Thank you.